It's member-supported Hawaii Public Radio, all things considered, and I'm Dave Lawrence. It is a fun time we've been having here this evening. I've got a gifted vocalist, guitarist, it says keyboardist, too, in his lineage. He does a little keyboard, making sure I'm not telling fibs here. Veteran of Honey Tribe, Royal Southern Brotherhood. He's through Friday at the Blue Note. It is Devin Allman taking a few moments for us on All Things Considered. Thank you, my brother.
Thank you, man. Thanks for having me.
You're quite welcome. And give folks an idea of the show that you're doing here in town in terms of what songs you're going to be playing. And kind of describe the set for newcomers who are going to hear you on the radio and are just curious, what's it all about?
I've kind of been out on the like the blues rock scene for like 10 years. I got about 8 records out. It's really kind of a trip through my career, you know. So we play like a little something off every record. Have a new record out that come out October called Ride or Die, and luckily, it came out number one on the Billboard Blues charts. It's my first number one ever.
Great cover of that.
Thank you. And, you know, just playing some songs from that and then songs throughout, you know, my career. It's a high energy, audience involved show. It's a lot of fun.
And one of the things he drops in there are some just tasty covers. Spinners, I mean, just caught me off guard. And I know you're a soulful brother because I was doing my homework on you, but that really that wrapped up the set in a nice way. Songs like that are the kind of thing you're welcome. That's the kind of nostalgic song. Those are kind of tearjerkers because we all have some kind of connection to them. And those are, it's almost like a Santana song in that it just touches you on that emotional level.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the Spinners, I mean, no one had ever covered that song that I knew of. So I was writing for that record a couple years ago, Ragged and Dirty. And I was, I rented a little chalet in the Alps. And to write the record, and I really hit a wall. Like I hit a bit of a writer's block, and I turned Pandora on, and the Spinners "I'll Be Around" came on, and I was like, I have to do this. So like, I love this song. It's like right in my wheelhouse. So like, it's been a staple in the set for years. So.
It's a feel-good song. You hear that, it's kind of like just, I lost my mom in 2013. For me, I hear that song, I can feel her reaching out to me. And I know you lost yours too. God bless you on that.
Thank you so much. Yeah. My mom passed a few months ago, and I took a little bit of time off from touring to just kind of like regroup and process and just kind of come out the other side knowing that the audience that we play for, thankfully, really pulls me through.
Yeah, you are amazing to have the composure you had a few months after my mom left. I mean, a few years now, it's been 4 years, and I don't have the composure you've got, so you're doing really good. And I couldn't help but notice on the stage, speaking of the vibe of powerful forces in our lives, the guitar strap that you're using. And I could be wrong, forgive me if I have it wrong, but I was looking at the, and great, thank you for the video, that's really cool of you to do. This guitar strap, I'm going out on a limb here, that looks like it's a very familiar one to me if you're a fan of the Brothers from way back when.
A lot of people, you know the look of this strap as being obviously like Duane Allman's guitar strap, which of course, he's the guy that like made it popular, but in actuality, like this is not Duane's. The guy that made Duane's called me and said, "I made him a backup strap like 30 years ago. Would you like it?" And I go, "Yeah, well, yes, I would." So I've played with this strap my whole career, and I've actually made it available to my fans, and you know, we've done a bit of business like just kind of recreating it and making it available to people. So, you know, it's a special kind of iconic piece of music history. So
it's cool. It's great to see it on you. It's great to see you walking around after the show with it too, keeping it close by.
I really don't want, you know, I get done with a show and it's like I don't want it to grow legs. So, yeah.
Good for you, man. You got to protect what you love. And you mentioned the word iconic. I was looking at some of the influences you've got and thinking about some of my favorite bands, and I thought, wow, it looks like Devin and I might have had the very our very favorite band when we were both little kids. And I don't see like the 7-inch platform boots, but I'm thinking
You know, it was really crazy. I think it was 77, and I was 5. And the craziest shit is that I can remember that. But my mom started dating a radio DJ, and like he came over and like we hung out, and I had like Beatles records and Wings records, and he was like, "You got to check this out," and he slid me a vinyl copy, no bullshit, 77 vinyl copy of Dress to Kill.
Oh wow!
And I looked at it, and I was 5 years old. It was like these dudes in suits, but with this like kabuki makeup, and I was like, wait, like I at a young age I understood like the whole irony of three-piece Wall Street suits with kabuki makeup, and I was like,
and the hair
I was like, I like this a lot, this is fucked up, it speaks to me. Yeah, man, you know. And then I don't know what movie it was that I heard, wanna rock and roll all night. And I was like, yeah, all right, sign me up, you know. So Kiss, I think Kiss for a lot of, like, how old are you?
I'm 46.
All right, 44. So Kiss for our age group, now that we're, here we are, right? We're in our mid-40s. You know, Kiss at that time.
Our Beatles.
And we have to say, in the cinematic sense, Star Wars. Like, we came up in the 70s, we saw Kiss and Star Wars. Like, from a musical standpoint and a cinematic standpoint, no one had ever seen anything like Kiss. No one had ever seen anything like Star Wars. And especially if you're a little kid, which we were, yeah, and your first musical shit was like Kiss, and your first movie was like Star Wars, everything was just screwed from that, like, because they really set the bar so high in entertainment value, and really, like, I think that's what it's about, man. People want to be entertained. They want to come to a show, they want to come to a movie, they want to turn off the world and get lost. And that's what I've tried to do in my show. It's just, you know what, you're with me now, you're with me for an hour and a half, forget everything, let's go.
And you show it on stage. He's walking on tables at the Blue Note. He's performing in a kind of visual way that, if you're a fan of old school rock bands like Kiss or any band from that period. But you're right, it was a certain kind of band that did that kind of, that had the showmanship that you're talking about. But a quick point, they had such great music on those first records, especially Dress to Kill, but all of the original Kiss records are highly overlooked because of their look, their music got overlooked.
But it really wasn't, like, you can't sit there and even as fans and say that their musicianship was amazing. Right. It wasn't that it was lacking. It's that the
hooks,
presentation, you know, like, I mean, it was just a vibe. It was a vibe. Like, you came to the show, the lights went down, Love Gun, Detroit Rock City, you know? So they weren't like killing it with licks, but they were killing you with the vibe, the presence, you know, and the thunder that they brought. And there's a lot of art to that that is very legit. So.
Oh, totally. I mean, Rock and Roll Over, that album's going to stand the test of time. I don't care what anybody says of the rest of my life. I'll listen. Love Him and Leave Him, the guitar solo Ace does in that thing.
Dude, yeah. Come on, Ace Frehley. Like, come on.
So a little bit about your career that was something that you've crossed paths with a lot of people, and you've been blessed because of who you are. And one of the cats that... Cyril Neville has been part of your life. Explain that and the Royal Southern Brotherhood. How'd you hook up with him?
It was crazy because I ended up with the same manager as Cyril, and he hit me like 2 weeks after I hired him, and he goes, "Hey man, what do you think about making a band with Cyril Neville?" I'm like, "No. What? Well, why would, like, I hired you to, like, take this this band that I'm in, you know, further." And but once I thought about it, I really thought that music lovers would love a little Neville and a little Allman in the same band. And we did it, and we did it for 3 years. It was successful. We went, like, all over the world, like, three times and made three records. And it was really one of the best times of my life.
you've gotten to do a lot of cool things. When you did the Javier Vargas's project, Love, yes. Union, and Peace, did you get to actually meet Jack Bruce, or was he just doing his own thing on that?
No. I never met Jack.
Because he's on that, right? He did his own.
We're on the same record, but I think he pulled those sessions up in like England, like did his parts, and you know, it was just one of those records where like everybody kind of chimed in from different parts of the world and just made the record for Javier. So
technology taking the good stories out of a session.
Yeah, right. We're not all in the same room, so it was fun though.
Similarly, I was taking a look at your social media account. It's just a great way to learn things about you. You and Bruce Willis, where was that picture taken? What was that all about?
That was Cornell Dupree's birthday, right before he passed away. He had a birthday party at the at BB King's in New York City. Mm. And I think it was 06, 07, something like that. And Cornell Dupree had like so many special guests, and some of the guests were my dad and Bruce Willis and me, and we went on stage, all three of us, and like blew through like two blues numbers and just had a blast. It was really cool.
That's very cool. And I can tell from your Twitter, you're an old school Rush fan, because 2112 was one of my great ones too. Yes. As a child, we, with lots of E's, are the priests of the temples, with lots of S's, of Syrinx.
Well, I mean, you know, the great thing about like having an iPhone for an artist is, you know, you can actually really kind of dive into your fan base. You know, like on Facebook, I think, I don't know, it's not insane, but I think I'm up to like 130 grand, like in followers or whatever. So I really like to engage them, and I like them to know like what's on my mind. And it can be anything from a Facebook Live performance of one of my shows, to a picture of me and my son at his birthday party, to like an album cover of an album I'm like rediscovering.
Bunch of cassettes that you dig.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the whole cassette thing really got out of hand. It was crazy because I realized that backstage, like before a show, when I would get pumped up, like the whole phone to the MP3 thing was just, I don't know, it just didn't have the depth. It didn't have the sauce. So I actually went on eBay and got like a cassette boombox, and then I started buying cassettes, and then all these fans hit me up and they're like, I got 50 cassettes, I'm gonna send them to you, you know. And all of a sudden I turn around, I have like 700 cassette tapes, but man, like the analog vibe of them, you know,
it's tape, brother.
It is, man. But my whole like MO on that was that I can't take a vinyl record player on tour and like get backstage and like put on a record. Like at home, all I play is vinyl records, but on tour it was like, I can play cassettes.
It's convenient.
It would be better than MP3s. It would be fatter, juicier,
warmer,
warmer analog. And so all of a sudden I look down, I have all these cassettes, and thank you guys for sending me cassettes. But it's good. I think I have to play a show now. So do we have one more?
Yep, one more question, then we'll let you go. I first met your pop in New Orleans. It was Jazz Fest 94. And then just a few months later, right after Woodstock, I was hanging with him, burning one, on the bus in Maine. Explain the interesting story of first making a connection with him yourself, and share a story of your relationship that just you like, that makes you feel good, that makes you feel warm and fuzzy, and just makes you set for your next set.
I mean, you know, it's a weird life, you know, when you're born like the son of a rock star, but you have no connection. You know, the connection came later in life, and I'm really grateful for that, actually, because, you know, when I was a kid, he was involved in things that were in no way cool.
Appropriate for a child.
Exactly. Yeah, as we know, man, like, obviously, you know, I'm a father now, and you know, my son's 17 years old, and, you know, I'm really glad that I wasn't exposed to that side of it. But I'm also really glad that later in life, I got a chance to like reconnect with him and really have a good bond with him. So without diving in too much, you know, because that's not about my path or my world or my records, my discography. But I'm just really grateful that we finally came together. We came together in peace. There was no bullshit. There was no bad blood. And we started making, you know, music together. I think we played on stage probably 100 times together. You know, and I love my dad and I respect my dad. It's just one of those things, you know, where you'll never get that lost time, but you can always like make up, you know, and a lot of the music really had its way of making up for the lost time. So
I dig that. It's Devin Allman here with us on All Things Considered. Thank you, my brother.
Thank you.